Righty, guys, we are back. I'm so excited. My next guest is an author of two books and a blog that I've thoroughly been enjoying reading, especially a recent article about bequeathing your friends after you've gone. I have a couple of friends we're going to talk about that need that. I'm telling you this. His first book, The Intersect, is as timely today as it was. It debuted in 2016 with issues of elder and healthcare, LGBT youth, and gay marriage in the suburbs. His second book, released this year after the fall, has a great mystery element to it that I love, as well as some more great character development. And I just can't wait to talk to him all about it. Please welcome for the first time to the show, Mr. Brad Graber. Brad, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thank you for having me today. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Well, I am looking forward to talking to you as well, my friend. Great information on these books. I want to thank you again. Brad sent me out some copies of these books that are just amazing reads. And like I told you off air, you have some of the best press material. Anything a guy needs to know, all my fellow radio interviewers out there, you got to have Brad on your show because he is prepared, my friends. So welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, with all first-timers on the show, I need to ask a little background about you. You're currently in Arizona, but like me, you've kind of had a fair traveled road to get there. Tell me about where you grew up a little bit and your life adventures that have brought you to Arizona.
Well, I'm actually a New York City boy. Grew up in, I was born in the Bronx and raised in Queens, and grew up in, we called it, Fresh Meadows, but it's actually Flushing, but we don't like to use the word Flushing, so we say Fresh Meadows. Sounds so much better.
I love it. There you go.
And then I went to college up in Buffalo. I went to SUNY at Buffalo, spent 4 years there, and if you haven't been to Buffalo, it's really a great place, but there's a lot of snow. But you probably know about snow, Scott, down in Ohio. And then
I have become familiar with it. Yes, unfortunately.
You have, I bet. Yeah, you've got to start preparing now. It's going to be coming soon.
Global warming is helping, though, I have to admit. I only had to shovel the driveway twice last year, so global warming is giving me a leg up here.
That is amazing. Isn't that amazing? Well,
it's
and then
crazy.
From,
it really is.
From there, I moved to Chicago for 4 years. I'm a healthcare administrator. Oh, I skipped St. Louis. I did my master's in healthcare in St. Louis at Wash U and was in St. Louis 2 years. Then I moved to Chicago for 4 years at a job for a hospital. And then I moved to Detroit, the Detroit area, back in 1983 when people were saying things like, will the last person in Detroit please turn off the lights? But I was there 18 years, so that was really kind of exciting. And then my husband, we weren't married at the time because, you know, marriage wasn't legal yet, sold his company, and he moved to the Bay Area, and I followed him and worked remotely for my healthcare company job, traveling across the country. And then we moved to Arizona for another position. I came here for another job, and Jeff, my partner, followed me. And after a year and a half working for a for-profit healthcare organization, for-profit, Scott, not good. I opted out and said, you know what? I don't think I really want to do that because I had spent quite a few years working in the nonprofit sector, and I think for-profit just wasn't my deal. So I started writing, and you have those two books in front of you. That's the genesis of how I became an author.
Talk a second. You have your, so like you said, your wonderful husband, Jeff, and baby doggy Charlie is part of your life. Tell me about when you came out to yourself and how you and your husband met.
Well, I always knew from the time of puberty that I was gay. So that was always very clear to me. But my folks didn't know. And like most gay men of a certain generation, we sort of let that go for quite a while. So I didn't actually come out to my family till I was probably 27, 28, 29. But at that time, I was already connected. I had a We used to call them lovers. Do you remember the term lover? Well, I had a partner for 4 years, and he was a wonderful guy. And he was actually ophthalmologist who worked at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. And he unfortunately died of AIDS in 1989.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Right. So suddenly I found myself on my own for about a year and a half. And I knew Jeff through mutual friends. And Jeff really had just broken up with his partner. So Jeff and I are now together. Are you ready for this? 28 years. And we
congratulations.
We actually had a wedding 5 years ago. 2 days ago was our anniversary, to which Jeff and I, because we've been together so long, the marriage seemed like it was just a legal option. And so we really weren't paying much attention to that day. We really look at our April date. So it was,
gotcha.
I consider myself very lucky. He's a wonderful guy.
That's fantastic. That's great. And I love the story of going from healthcare to author, because I was wondering where that juxtaposition came, but I could understand wanting to get out of the for-profit hospital. Those guys are something else, I can imagine. Goodness gracious.
Well, you know, it was interesting because when you work in nonprofit, and I did, I actually worked in Catholic healthcare, so that seems like that would be a bad fit. I was in Catholic healthcare about 15 years, the last 15 years, and it was just wonderful. I just loved it. Before that, I was always working in nonprofits. And, you know, in Catholic healthcare, they say no margin, no mission. In for-profits, they say no margin, no job. And so it was really very different. I mean, every week we were looking at financials, and it wasn't ideally where you'd want to be as an executive, and it certainly wasn't where you'd want to be, I think, probably as a patient. Okay, I said it. I didn't tell you what organization, but I said it. Try not to do that if you can. Try to go to a non-for-profit, maybe even a religious-based facility, but really definitely a non-profit organization is best. And you guys have great healthcare in Ohio. I know that. So, that's always a good thing.
We do have some good options here. I got to say, I've been very, very lucky here. But like you said, and it's the nonprofit. I worked for nonprofits for quite a while too, not for a hospital, but for just YMCA and different things like that. And it is a different animal than for profit, because you really are trying to concentrate on the person and not the company as much. The company will usually take care of itself. But kind of scary
Yeah, it's really about the services, right? It's about the services and making sure you're meeting needs, and it's really important. Nonprofits are great, and I still work for them. I still do volunteer for actually two groups, which I'll just quickly mention. One is called Duet, and so I drive seniors to doctor's appointments, and so, you know, people who are pretty well homebound and bad. I don't have families. And then I also take a blind gentleman shopping every 2 weeks to Walmart. So it's...
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's kind of fun.
I think the only thing that would get me into Walmart is if I took a disabled person to go as a kind deed for the day. Otherwise, I get scared of Walmart. It's just too big and too crazy for me.
Well, I wear a badge, and I have a gentleman with dark glasses with the stick, so nobody usually comes up to us. Actually, what I do find, and this is really amazing, is how really lovely the people in Walmart are. And this has been a discovery for me, because like you, I too was, looks like a dangerous crowd. But they have been so kind. I just am always amazed by the kindness of the people who work there, as well as the customers. They've been really nice, you know. So
that's awesome here. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, some of them look like they might be on crack cocaine or meth addicts, but they're still lovely.
But they're friendly crack cocaine dealers, so that's a good thing. There we go.
They are. They really are. Because sometimes I see people that are like, oh my gosh, that person really either they look extremely underweight and you know they're on something, but again, they've just been terrific. So, and then the other organization that I volunteer with is called One in Ten. I worked with them earlier when I came to Phoenix. They're an organization that really supports kids who've been thrown out of their homes who are gay, lesbian, questioning, bisexual, transgender. So they are, it's an amazing organization in Phoenix, and they do a lot of
great
things.
Give the name
one
more time. You cut out just a little bit, Jeff. Give me that name one more time, Brad.
Yeah, it's called One in Ten.
Oh, nice. Okay, great.
Yeah, it's a great organization.
That's fantastic when you can work with LGBT youth like that, because it's still such an at-risk group. I think you've wrote about it in one of your recent blogs, that it's still 40%, 40 to 60% of the homeless are LGBT youth, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's it's a surprise, because people think now with gay marriage that kids are coming out and it's really not a problem. But there are a lot of kids that still struggle and a lot of families that are still rejecting. So it's an important thing that we think about our youth. Well,
I'm so glad that you're doing that. We'll talk about this right turn now to writing. Were you always a writer? Did you do short stories? Was it a college thing? Or what made, of all the things you can do when you got out of the public sector there, or the private sector, what made writing become a passion for you?
Well, I always loved to write, and I grew up in a family where, you know, they didn't really give me a chance to talk, so I was busy making up stories about them in my head, you know. it was just a passion for me, and I tried to write when I was working, but writing novels is really a difficult thing to do, and I couldn't really manage to do the two things, have a full-time career and be a writer. I know a lot of people do it,
right,
but I really couldn't do it. So I used to get a short story here or there published, but not anything worthy of a novel. And I really wanted to write novels. And so,
well, and I love the stories of your novels, because it has a great overarching arc, but it has individual characterizations that are just amazing. Let's talk about the first one. I mean, you won quite a few awards for The Intersect. Talk a little bit about that story and what inspired you to write that novel.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I moved, I lived in the Bay Area for quite a while, 10 years, and I have a lot of friends there. And as you know, the Bay Area is very liberal. And when I moved to Arizona, I moved to Arizona in 2009. We had a lot of things going on here that were not very cool. And we still struggle as a country with those issues of undocumented immigration. But we had Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was, you know, rounding up people off the street. We had SB 1070. We had Jan Brewer, who was pointing her finger in Barack Obama's face. So we had a lot of things going on here. And my friends didn't want to come visit, let's put it mildly. They didn't want to come. I really moved into, people don't know this about Arizona, but Phoenix is a blue city, and it's not the only city in Arizona that is Democrat. It's liberal, it's friendly, there are just so many gay people. When I moved here from the Bay Area and I went to a Safeway or shopping store, I walked around and I was like clocking gay people left and right. Now, I don't mean cruising them, because, you know, I wouldn't do that, but
never.
But I did see so many gay couples, and, you know, it was just amazing to me. So it's just a very metropolitan, well-rounded city. And so I moved into a neighborhood where I was concerned that people might not be accepting of a gay couple, but they were so warm. In fact, there were four other gay couples in the neighborhood, and I would walk my dog in the morning, and I was suddenly surrounded by all these women who were widows who were walking their dogs. And it was
a
whole crew going on, and people were just great. So I thought it would be a wonderful thing to write a book about Phoenix, and not about the side of all the problems, but really what it's like to live here with the kind of people who, you know, are really interested in making connections. Just so you know, Scott, a lot of the people who live in Phoenix are really had originally been Midwesterners from Ohio, from Michigan, from Wisconsin. They tend to come down here.
Okay.
And so it's got a real Midwestern flavor. In fact, if you come through, I'll take you on a little tour, and I'll show you areas that look exactly like Ohio, believe it or not, in downtown Phoenix. So people have recreated.
Well, we're going to make a date for next June already, because I've been invited back to Palm Springs for the month of June next year. So at the end of May, you and I are going to have a little Phoenix history tour date.
Okay, well, now don't threaten me. I expect you now. I'm putting it down in my calendar. So it's, but it's just a great place. So when I wrote the Intersect, I wanted to tell the stories of these strangers. So in the book, there's a gal who's 75. She's independent, and she has a sudden healthcare crisis. She breaks her hip, and she finds herself suddenly alone. And there are a lot of women in, you know, in the Phoenix area of that age category that might fall into that kind of experience. And she has to go through this healthcare crisis by herself. And so there's that. There's a gay couple that come down from the Bay Area, relocate, and they buy a house. And so they also move into the Phoenix area. There's a guy who's running a small business. He's his name is Ernie. And we learned through the book that he's undocumented. And he suddenly gets deported, and his life is turned upside down because he really came as a child, so he considers himself 100% American. And then we have story of a psychic, Anna, and the reason why Anna's in the book is because we have a psychic on every corner. I don't know if people know that about Phoenix, but it's a very psychic place. Sedona is only an hour and a half away, and Sedona is also full of psychics. So they seem to be running back and forth between, you know, Sedona and Phoenix. But we have all these great psychics. So we have a psychic there. And then we have this lovely couple who relocate from Michigan. It's a second marriage. And so they're having financial problems. Remember, it's 2009. The book is set in 2010. So it's after 2009.
Right.
And so all these people are going to mix together in the book and share this experience. And then finally, we have a gay teen, Henry, who's been kicked out of his house, and he's homeless. So all these stories sort of wind together. And really, that's where we came up with the title, The Intersect. Wasn't that clever? The Intersect.
I like it. I like it a lot. And you can't help but, after hearing a little bit of your backstory, how a lot of these stories are very upfront in your mind here, and you have a little experience here. We're talking about Henry, of course, like you said, kicked out of the house, and you're working with fantastic group, the 1 in 10. And then we have Charlie and Dave, that one person leaves their job, and it sounds like you and Jeff have each done that at different times.
Right.
And talk about how much, of course, I'm sure every author's own life stories reflect their work, but how much of it did you find of yourself putting into the book?
Well, quite a bit, because I sort of feel, you know, my friends will say, oh, you're Charlie, you're Dave. And I always think, well, actually, I'm also Daisy. So, you know, you're all these characters in the book. But the thing that's interesting to me about Charlie and Dave that is different than Jeff and I, in the book, Charlie and Dave are facing a crisis because one leaves a job, and so the other doesn't want to move. He likes Phoenix and wants to stay. And so suddenly there's a challenge in the relationship. And I really write about relationships. That's what I like to explore. And I really like to write about people who are north of 35 and their relationships. And so it sort of seemed to me that Charlie and Dave have this sudden challenge. How are they going to move forward with their relationship when they have this circumstance going on, and they go through their challenges with it? I think that's my phone in the background. You might be hearing, and I'm going to have
that
to
is,
tell my brother.
That's okay. Usually it's mine, so I'm happy. Well,
it's
mine.
Like my brother is constantly calling
me.
You know, it's like Rosh Hashanah, and I think he really is like missing me or something. So I can't seem to, you know, get rid of him. You know, every time
that's
I pick
okay.
up.
Yeah, we understand. So. I had shouted out my Rosh Hashanah earlier because I have quite a few Jewish friends that are celebrating today. So happy
right.
New Year! That's amazing.
Thank you.
Well, like I said, I love the characterizations of the book. You write so well. Talk about being though an out gay author writing contemporary fiction. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced building an audience?
Well, I first of all, my covers don't have any nudes or sexually provocative men or women. And, you know, I think maybe next time I'm going to do that. So I want people to, you know, really be attracted to the books, but I don't really have that. They're serious contemporary novels. And actually, I have really not successfully tapped into the GLBTQ community. My readers, and I'm into, this year I did 7 book clubs. So the people who are taking the book tend to be women between 35, 65 who are politically, culturally, socially engaged and active. And so I have a lot of supporters in that realm. I was just asked to do a reading for a fundraiser for David Garcia. He's running for governor he's a Democratic candidate in Arizona.
Fantastic.
And so we're going to be doing a fundraiser with him. And so those are my readers, but I have not necessarily tapped into the GLBTQ community. I do have a gay audience. Actually, I'm doing a book club in New York City. The Gay Men's Book Club is taking the book in December. So I'm slowly getting in there. But I think it's really a great read for people who are gay or GLBTQ. You know, it's just a great read for them. And it's something I would like to read, which is why I wrote it. It's kind of book that I'm looking for. So.
Well, like I said, I've only been able to skim it so far, but I'm really looking forward to diving in. I'm a voracious reader, so I'm going to be jumping into it on Wednesday when I finish my other show tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it because I do love the characterization. The characterizations are wonderful, so that's going to be fun. And speaking
Thank
of that,
you.
We got the second novel out that just came out, After the Fall. Now, this follows the story of a teenage girl who really can't remember her mother and goes on a journey to find a long lost uncle. I love it that it has a little bit of a mystery element to it in the beginning, but it really has a poignant story. Talk about what your idea was for this and how this book came about.
Yeah, I really wanted to write a family drama. So I'm a big fan of Tennessee Williams and anything he ever did. And, you know, if you think about Tennessee Williams and the Glass Menagerie and all of the wonderful Streetcar Named Desire, he always wrote about people, relationships, family dynamics, and a lot of dysfunction. And so when I wrote After the Fall, I was thinking a lot about that, about a young girl who can't remember her mother, yet she's 15 and her mother only died a few years earlier. And what would that be like? And what's that storyline? And I've had a personal experience with a character like that. So that was always a seed in my mind about what that character is like. And I, again, this is somebody I know. I don't know them in real life, but I know of their story. So it was always something that sort of captured my imagination. And she does go on a journey. She does go through Toledo, Ohio. I don't know if you saw that. She goes through
I
Toledo.
I went through Toledo, Ohio Wednesday or Saturday, as a matter of fact. So I have that
go.
In common.
There you go. So she goes to Toledo, Ohio, and then she makes her way eventually to Phoenix. And she's really not running away, but she's trying to run towards a truth about her life and her family, which her grandmother isn't about to tell her. And so when you get to the end of the book, which is a real twist, you'll be surprised at the end. You'll learn why her grandmother has been keeping these kinds of secrets. So it's really an interesting read. It's doing quite well on Amazon. And so I'm kind of excited about it.
That's amazing. I can't wait to jump into it next. Now, you have one character, Harry, who's a bisexual character. Was that hard to write about at all, or how do you get into mindsets that aren't your own like that?
Well, I have spent a few of my years before I came out with women, so I don't think that was hard for me to do.
There you go.
And so I thought that was kind of an interesting story to talk about. It can be a challenge at times, and especially I think about men who have gone through a crisis. I think it can throw you back into a different situation and steer you away from maybe being your genuine self. And I'm not saying that his being bisexual isn't his genuine self. Well, I guess what I'm saying is it could steer you one way or the other from either getting married to a woman or going ahead and being in a relationship with a man, or if you're a woman with a woman. So I think there are factors in life that shift our focus. And, I think, well, for one, I mean, think about it, Scott, the AIDS epidemic certainly sent a lot of people running. If you didn't die, you went running. So that was, I just think that was an interesting angle too, and different. Yeah.
Yeah, I really did enjoy that. Looking forward to delving into that, because I was a kid of that area. I was in my, just kind of exploring my sexuality around 22, I guess, or so I was, maybe 18, mm-hmm. 22, I guess, when it really started coming together. Mm-hmm. And it was a scary time. And you really had to think of a lot of things, including your own mortality when you were deciding on how to live your own best life for yourself. It was kind of a scary time.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because there was a time when you would go to the theater and we would watch plays and see shows or movies, even like Long Term Companion, where the gay characters are always dying at the end. And it was kind of like it was a real downer, But now that we've moved away from a lot of that, sometimes I think the next generation, the generation coming up, they're not aware of what those experiences were like. And so when I wrote After the Fall, I really was focused on that, sharing that. In fact, in the book, there's a teenager, Ricky is the teen girl who goes on the journey, but she has a boyfriend, and his name is Barney. And to him, a lot of the gay talk is code. He can't figure it out, like the word partner. If you in the book, Harry talks about a partner, and, Barney thinks he's talking about somebody he was in business with. And then when Harry starts to explain the whole thing about Rock Hudson, this 15-year-old looks at him and says, "Rock who? Who's Rock Hudson?" And we, in a way, the history of the gay movement, as well as AIDS crisis, are sort of linked hand in hand. And we forget that we have a generation now that really don't know any of those mile markers, if you will. So it's I thought it was worth doing a book and talking about that.
Yeah, I really do love that. I mean, that's come as an LGBT advocate. I consider myself somewhat doing this radio show a bit, and I kind of like that June is both Pride Month and LGBT History Month, and I think it's time, as we get more socially accepted, we need to kind of change the pride back to the history and really get involved in the history. Because you're right, an entire generation has no idea what happened before us. I just saw a documentary the other day for my guest in Palm Springs that did a story about the Black Cat riots in L.A. that happened 3 years before Stonewall. And I never knew that happened. Stonewall was always my turning point in learning it. So there's still much that I can learn. And I think it's great when we have authors such as yourself that will weave those stories into it, or at least kind of give a perspective for it. Sometimes I think that's very important.
Yeah, I really can't call it historical fiction, but boy, I wish I could. I love historical fiction. And I'm a big fan of Ken Follett and all of his stuff. And so I think that if you read the book, if you read After the Fall, you'll walk away with a pretty good sense of some of our history. So, yeah.
Right. And you talked earlier about being a fan of Tennessee Williams and, of course, like you said, Glass Menagerie. A lot of his books focus on his humble beginnings in St. Louis. We talked about St. Louis earlier. Eugene O'Neill's mother was a morphine addict, and she kind of did Long Day's Journey into Night, that experience.
Right.
Have you learned anything, any truths about your own life from your writing after the fact?
Well,
you've kind of,
yeah. Yes. Well, I'm still not a morphine addict, and I'm not riding the streetcars. But what I think, you know, when you're a writer, you work through. It's like playing, if you will. When you were a kid, you know, you play and you make up stories in your head. And so when you're a writer, you really get to live experiences that you don't actually have to live. So you can have this kind of experience with characters where you don't have to be that character. You don't have to be in that circumstance. So for me, I'm kind of a conservative, shy, introverted guy. And so when I write, I can write about people who, you know, are able to say exactly what's on their mind, and they're open and free about that. And so that's really kind of great. I just love that. I love dialogue. I'm really a big fan of, you know, the quick-witted response. It doesn't work so well in real life, though. You know, you can get people pretty upset with a quick tongue. So, you know, it's really wonderful to be able to do it in a book.
There you go. I love that. Well, let's switch from the book to the blog a bit, because that's where I think your witticism really comes through. I mean, it's called There I Said It. I love the title. And I think you wrote about it the best. It's you call it upbeat and engaging, light and fun, thoughtful, playful, and silly, and sometimes dead serious, as if Dick Cavett and Irma Bombeck had a baby. And I think that's so true. I love your writing on there. Where do you think your humor came from? Where does your sense of humor come from?
Well, I think it comes from really growing up in my family. My dad was pretty funny, and I grew up in New York City, and, you know, New York City has a certain edge to it. And I was raised in an apartment complex with 8 floors and 22 apartments on each floor. So there were all these people, and they were constantly in our lives. And, you know, you'd ride the elevator with all these folks, and just, you know, just so many stories and funny things that would happen that, you know, you just eventually, when you're so crowded together in that kind of a dense space, you have to develop a sense of humor. You really do. So I think that's really where that perspective comes from. And for many years, I've been walking around saying, there, I said it, not wanting to say whatever it was. And, you know, just trying to be, you know, a good boy, and then just coming out with it. So I think that There I Said It seemed to be the perfect title. But what really has concerned me, so if you have millennials listening, a lot of people don't know anymore who Dick Cavett is or who Irma Bombeck was. And so I'm thinking, really, I'm going to need suggestions. Somebody please help me. Give me 2 other names of people who are more contemporary and who I could use as a marker, because it's kind of funny. People don't really know those references anymore. I think they're older
references.
There you
go. I think you'd have to go Conan O'Brien and Nora Ephron. Even Nora might be a little old school now.
I think Nora, right. But didn't you love her? I loved her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
She's a fantastic writer. Love her.
Fantastic. So, yeah. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying
it. Like I said,
blog.
I've been enjoying following the blog along, and I love the Bequeathing Your Friend story. I read that the other day. That was one of my favorites. I like your game of life you sent me. What's your score? Where do these ideas come to you? Where are you sitting where the lightning bolt strikes?
Well, I've got to tell you, the Bequeath Your Friends, a friend of mine, actually a very dear friend of mine, died in May, and he's a Michigan guy, and I went in twice to be with him, and he had an amazing group of friends around him, just amazing. And so I thought a lot about when I was there, because I was there 5 days each visit, And we were all together in the hospital room, and I kept thinking, you know how people are concerned about wills and all of that? I kept thinking, you know, the wills aren't what's important. What's really important is all these damn friends. I want these people around me when I die. How do I keep these people? And I really thought it would have been great if my friend Harold could have just said in his will, you know, Sandy and Gary, you're going to Brad. And then I'm giving this friend over here. Because my friend Harold didn't need them anymore, but God knows, you know, I thought I could use them. So I've been, that's where that idea came to me. And I've been kind of actually working on that. So and I think it's an important thing. And I'm sure, Scott, you have wonderful friends. And so it's, so really, Scott, if you make out a will, would you leave a couple to me? It would be so wonderful.
I would trade mine in for a couple of my other friends, though. So I kind of want to. I would like to see if we could do a round robin there, because I have a couple of friends where like you can bequeath me these friends, and I will trade you off these. We'll maybe have a an early draft like they do for football season now.
Yeah,
we can draft our friends. Maybe.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. So that's where that one came from, and then the other blog, you know, how do you score your life? I think that, you know, a lot of times we don't think about the things that are really important. You know, we go through our days, we walk the dog, we take out the garbage, we do the dishes, but some of the things that are really important about how we live and think about our lives and, you know, where we're going and what we're doing. So, you know, like even, because I volunteer, there are many years I did not volunteer because I was working. But I kind of think it's important when you stop really working full time to really give back to the community. You mentioned you are very active, and I think it's really important to do it. And a lot of people, God bless them, do it when they're working. But sometimes it's hard to do. But when you're not working full time anymore, I think it's important to do it. So, you know, that's where those ideas come from, pretty much. It's just my experience.
And you talked about that. You talked about writing. A writer kind of has to write a little bit every day. Do you have a certain set time you try to keep yourself to, or certain set pages, or are you an inspiration writer?
No, I do try to keep myself to a schedule. I do 7:30 to 2 every day, and then in the afternoon I think about how I'm going to get the books out there and what I need to do and who I need to talk to. So today I'm talking to you, we're on different time zones, so it's easy because it's 3:00 in Phoenix. That's how I kind of try to do it. And I think it's important to keep writing each day. But, you know, the funny thing is I've just started my third novel. And when you start writing again, novel writing is a different art, if you will. It's amazing how long it takes you to get back into it. So it's always a challenge, I think, to do it. But writers love to write. And I think the blog really helps me, you know, stay limber with it.
Right. And are you a fan of long handwriting, or do you do everything on your computer?
Everything's done on the computer. There is so much editing. I can't imagine doing it longhand. I mean, you're constantly changing everything you're writing. So, I mean, you have to admire people, you know, who writers in the past who did everything with pen and paper. I mean, that's really quite amazing to me that could have ever been successful. I think I would have given up a long time ago. It would be just too frustrating. Just too frustrating.
It's amazing. It's amazing how that you see these people with these manuscripts written in cursive. It's like, I can't even do cursive anymore. I think I print everything more. I don't remember the art of cursive anymore.
That's right. Funny. And you know, really, to be honest, who holds a pen anymore? So, you know, even if you write your checks, it's like, I always think to myself, how do they know that's my handwriting?
Right.
It's so terrible.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Now, you teased about your next book, and some of your writings, you kind of said that you were thinking about writing a book about two men in their 60s and the ladies that they love. Now, it doesn't say that they're in love with them. So is this going to steer into maybe more of a straight story, or is this, or are we doing something totally altogether different? Are you using a little
Scott,
alliteration for me?
Well, Scott, you know, there can never be a totally straight story. And I think I really owe it to myself to write about people I know, our lives, and how that flows. What I wanted to write about for that book, it's going to be called, I think it's going to be Boca by Moonlight. And it's about two men who are widowers, if you will, once divorced, actually, and how their special friendship has buoyed them through life's challenges. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I think that, and you know, we just talked about whether they're straight or gay. Well, you know, there's no such thing as you know, being straight down the middle. It's not going to happen. I guarantee that.
Agreed. I love
but
that.
But I know that's not going to happen. But I think it's important to tell the story of two men who, you know, love each other, and they may not be sleeping with each other, but they certainly love each other, and they come from a certain generation who've lived through different experiences. And, you know, a lot of, I'm sure you have gay men friends, as I do, who have children and who actually had children with female counterparts and had been married earlier. So I think that's kind of an interesting story and group of people to talk about, too.
I agree 100%. One of my best friends is going to be turning 60, and he has children all the way from 35 to 25. And it's just a whole interesting dynamic, and I love listening to the stories, listening from his children's perspective and from his, and it's pretty amazing. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be a great book.
Yeah. And again, I don't think anybody's really writing about that, so I really want to explore that a little bit. I think that'll be pretty cool. So, yeah.
Fantastic. And now you talk a little bit about reaching out to different markets and marketing the books. And what do you feel about this whole social media thing? That just seems like the only way that people can get themselves out there anymore seems to be social media. Do you like the social media game? Do you like the writing in 280 characters, or how does that fit into your writing schedule?
Well, I do social media. I honestly find it more current events for me. So, you know, if you're a Twitter fan, I do a lot of Twitter, and I'm always interested in it. I like to see what people are writing about, what's happening now. It's very current events focused. So I think that's pretty cool, but I'm not sure really how many people are ever going to buy a book because they have seen you on Twitter. I don't think that's really going to happen. I also have Facebook, I have an author page, but again, I'm not quite sure how many people that's going to work for. So I do social, and I'm just starting to get into Pinterest. Don't ask.
That's one I don't do, so I don't know that one. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, 75% of their users are female, and they actually do a lot of buying off of that. You can do a lot of when you pin to bulletin boards, you can click on the pin and it can go directly to your book. So, I mean, I've been like, oh, well, I've got to look at this, but it's something I'm just starting, but I do social media, but I think it's hard for folks to really, to buy books off of social media. It really isn't
right. What
you know, now that I'm saying this, you know, there are going to be 30 consultants who are going to disagree with me because, you know, authors, you know, most authors are really the target for people selling services. And there are all these people out there that will tell you, sell 10,000 books. You can do this. You can do that. And everything costs $250, you know, all these programs. But I am on Amazon, and I do advertise on Amazon, and I've actually found that very successful because that's where people go to shop. And, you know, if they see your book, they're going to potentially buy it. So I've been really pleased with that experience.
And you say you like to go to these book clubs and do signings there or talks there. Do you like
yeah.
new signings? Is that kind of a fun thing for you?
Well, I do book clubs. I've had quite a few this year. And I go on site and actually meet with the readers and talk through the books. It's usually an hour or two. I bring a bottle of wine. I'll bring a piece of cake, you know, and we just try to make it like a party atmosphere.
Make it a clatch. There you go. Make
yeah,
it a clatch.
Exactly. Let's get together. Let's just chat. And so I'll do that. I also do book parties. And so we'll go into different markets. And it's kind of like, you know, Ding Dong, Avon's Calling. We have a fan, a super fan. We'll invite all their friends in. And we'll co-host it. And we'll provide, you know, so some appetizers, the liquor. And we'll do a reading. And we'll sell books. And so in 2 hours, you can pretty much move 30 to 40 books and meet new readers who you haven't met before. And what's really terrific about it is you have a super fan who's hosting it with their friends. So it's just great because they enjoyed the book, they love talking about the book, and then you're in front of a whole group of people you'd never get to meet. So that's really kind of the way I've been doing it. It's worked so far, so that's good.
That's great. Well,
yeah,
talk
so
about
anybody,
Jeff. He said Jeff sold his business. Is he a book husband now?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say before we go there that if anybody's interested in a book party or a book club, please let me know. You can go on my website at bradgraber.com. I'm sorry. So now I'll talk about Jeff. We've been together 28 years. Jeff's a retail psych consultant. So he's the guy we blame for, you know, putting up the parking lots and, you know, putting up all the malls and Jeff goes
uh-oh,
in.
Oh, okay.
You know when you go to Europe and suddenly you see that there's a William Sonoma. It's like I didn't come over here to see that. So Jeff's really kind of responsible for that. You know, he's worked with a lot of the retailers. He does their market research and tells them which sites to go into, how to place their stores. And so he does all, and he helps, you know, shopping malls are now on the way down. They're really struggling. So he helps reposition them into medical office buildings or offer healthcare campuses. He does all that kind of work. So he's got his own company,
yeah.
His own group.
So you haven't
people.
Turned him into a book husband yet. He's not there selling the books for you and going around and being the promo guy.
No, but you know, when we do these book parties, I usually give him the email list and say, Jeff, make sure everybody fills it out. So he does that. and he helps with the cleanup and, you know, God bless him. You know, he's really just an amazing person and always has been supportive and he's a big fan. So it's nice to have that.
I love hearing that. Well, that is fantastic. Brad Graber, I've had a fantastic time getting to know you, and I can't wait to dig into both these books here. Give everyone again your website one more time and where they can find you on social media. Are you and Jeff sharing social media Twitter? I figured
no.
Jeff Bra, wait a second. Are you guys sharing?
Well,
all your information there.
Yeah. You can find me at bradgraber.com. That's bradgraber.com. And that's my website. And you can also sign up for my blog on that website. And if you need to email me, I'm at brad@bradgraber.com. It's so easy. It's so easy. So, and really, if people are interested too, you can follow me at Jeff Bra, JeffBra1. It's Jeff Bra 1 on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So I would love that too. And yes, that is an amalgamation of our names.
That's what I figured. They better not be sharing one. I'm going to give him some grief. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next book. How long is your writing process? When do you think we're going to be seeing book number 3 here?
Probably next summer, I would think. Probably next summer, maybe a little bit later, maybe a year from January. I don't know. It depends. You know, it depends on how easily distracted I am. So.
All right.
It really
we'll
does
see. We'll
depend.
Put two things on your calendar. We'll put either me coming there at the end of May, or are you coming to Palm Springs and having a coffee clutch at my resort in June? So you have to finish it by
that.
June for the new book, or we'll talk about
that.
It when I come in May.
That's terrific. I would love it. And do call me when you come through. I want to meet you and speak to you. And we'll have a great time. We'll take you to dinner. But are you coming with a lot of people?
I only bring my mother if I have to bring anybody, but I don't think she's going to make it anymore. I took her cross country with me this last trip, and I think we just about killed her three times. So we may send her ahead on the train next time, and I'll meet her up there.
Okay. Well, if you bring her, your mother's welcome. We'd love to see her too. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, no, definitely. We'd love to spend time with you and show you a little bit of Phoenix. I'm sure you've seen Scottsdale, right? Have you seen Scottsdale?
I have seen Scottsdale, but I have not seen too much of Scottsdale. I haven't seen too much of either. I saw a little bit of Scottsdale back in the day. I used to work for a company called Bobby McGee's that was centered in Scottsdale on Camelback Road there.
Yeah.
So I know the area a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. Everybody knows Scottsdale, but nobody really knows Phoenix. And Phoenix is really a great up-and-coming city. So, we'll show you both. We'll take you around. Oh, you'll be seen. There you go. So
I like it. Well, thank you so much for your time. Everyone, please go check out these two books. Again, it is The Intersect, and After the Fall. I will be following along, starting on The Intersect on Wednesday night. So if you want to tweet me where you're at with it, please follow me along with it there. Brad, thanks so much for being on the Let's Study Show today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Scott. I really enjoyed it. And happy holidays to everybody in your audience. So, okay?
Super. Well, stay on the line for me. Let's go ahead and play a quick song out here. Let me find one. This is Ginger Minge with I Am What I Am. You're listening to the Leftist Radio Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'll be back to wrap it up in just a couple of minutes.
I am what I am. I am my own special creation. So come, take a look. Give me the hook or the ovation. It's my world that I want to have a little pride in. My world, and it's not a place I have to hide in. Life's not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am what I am. I am what I am. I don't want praise. I don't need pity. I bang my own drum. Some think it's noise. Well, I think it's pretty. And so what if I love each feather and each spangle? Why not try to see life from a different angle? Your life is a sham till you can shout out loud, I am what I am. I am what I am. And what I am needs no excuses. I steal my own deck. Sometimes the eight, sometimes the deuces. There's one life, and there's no return and no deposit. One life, so it's time to open up your closet. Life's not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am.
All righty, we are back, boys and girls. Thanks for listening to the Leftist Right Show today. I want to give a big shout-out to my guest, singer Chrissy Lee, all the way from Switzerland. I'm glad we were finally able to get her on the show after some connection issues. And a big thanks to Brad Graber, author. Please check out his two books. They are fantastic. I'm looking forward to reading them both, but just the blurbs on them are amazing. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow's show, we're going to have Jake Biondi. He is the author of Boys Town, the series. His ninth book in the series is getting ready to come out in Christmas, and they're looking to do a television show around it, featuring some of the great hot models of Andrew Christian and so many great characters that he's brought to life there. So listen to that, and we're going to talk all about the big gay road trip and let you know everything that happened on the show. That'll be tomorrow right here, 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern time. A couple of quick stories I'll get to before we sign off today that just kind of tickle my fancy. I want to give a big shout-out to my buddies Brandon Roth and Michael Vega. They were on one of the shows on the big gay road trip in Palm Springs. Their short film, Top Cat, went on to do a fantastic job in the Marietta Film Festival, International Film Festival. It was made in 24 hours. They were a top five of 175 entries, and they won the award for best makeup for the short. So congratulations to Brandon and Michael, who is in that. Kind of interesting, fun news. There's been a new gay Asian cast on Grey's Anatomy for next season coming up in just a few short weeks. Alex Landy is his name. He's going to play Dr. Nico Kim. He's been on Bull. He's a model and a fitness trainer. And it'll be another great LGBT addition to the Grey's Anatomy cast. It's had some great diversity in the past. So a gay and an Asian doctor are going to be there. So that's kind of fantastic. Some sad news. I did hear about Daniel Kublock. He's a German gay pop singer. He was number three in Pop Idol over in Germany. He was on Big Brother over there. He apparently committed suicide on a cruise from Hamburg to New York. Had been talking about just a few weeks earlier his battling with depression and mental illness. And unfortunately, looks like he took his own life just a few short days ago on a cruise. So very sad to hear about that. Positive story I want to finish on today. If you've not heard of Pete Buttigieg, don't know how to pronounce it correctly, Pete Buttigieg, he is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, possibly running for president. He is gay. He is married. He's a veteran. Yes, please, Pete Buttigieg. I need to get him on my show. If anyone knows him, South Bend, I just drove through on our big gay road trip on the way back this Saturday. Of course, home to Notre Dame over there in Indiana. So I need to get Mayor Pete on the Left and Straight Show. If anyone knows out there listening in Indiana and can get him on, let me know. I am booking up for September now because I was out of town for so long. I don't have all sorts of guests filled for September, but they're starting to pull together. If you know of anyone that would be a great guest on the Left and Straight Show, please reach out to them and have them contact me, or you contact me with their information at Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at leftofstraight.com. That's L-E-F-T-O-F-S-T-R and the number 8.com. Follow me on social media. On Twitter and Instagram, it's at leftofstraight. On Facebook, it's the Left of Straight Show is our page. And my personal page is Scott Fullerton. You can follow me there. And, again, follow us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker and Stitcher and all those great any place you can find internet radio podcasts. I am there. Tomorrow, brand-new show. We're going to have Jake Biondi talk about the big gay road trip. A big shout out to my guest today. Have a fantastic rest of the week, and I hope to hear from you soon. This is Scott Fullerton for the Left and Straight Show. Bye-bye.